Today is April 8th, 2015. My name is Deborah Schwartz, and I'm speaking today with Joan Murray. Hi, Joan.
Hi, Deborah. So I'll start off with telling you how and when I came to Mill Valley. We moved here on my 10th birthday, which was October 1st, 1956. My mother had visited a friend. She was single, divorced, which was rather unusual at the time. And she came over to visit a friend and absolutely fell in love with Mill Valley. We lived in San Francisco at the time. And so we rented a house on Marion Avenue, 11 Marion, and we were living in the Redwoods, and it was pretty glorious. And I knew, it was so interesting because I knew that when we moved here that it was a special place and that my life was different, and it was really wonderful. So I entered the fifth grade at Old Mill School and attended fifth and sixth grades there. Went to Edna McGuire School for the seventh and eighth grade. That's before the middle school was built. And then went on to TAM, and I was part of the class of 64. We just had our 50th reunion last year, and I was on the organizing committee for that reunion. It was really fun. My mother married when I was 14, remarried, and her name was Jeannie Creamer. That was her maiden name. Murray is my maiden name, which I've kept. And my stepfather, Lloyd Creamer, worked at the Mill Valley Lumberyard, and he became the manager there. So we have very strong ties to the town and to the hills and the trees and every part of it. He said he would sit on the bridge and drink his coffee in the morning and watch people go by on the buses to commute, and knew how fortunate he really was. And as an aside, when he died, I illegally, along with my daughters and sister, scattered his ashes at Mill Valley Lumber in the creek. So he's still there. So, we have really strong bonds. And I think one of the things I realized when I came here, even as a child, was the importance of being in a small town and how much it nourished me. It was easy to know a lot of people. I can remember even once being in high school, being in a freshman history class, and answering a question that rather stupidly, which got reported back to my dad like the next day. He played basketball at night with the history teacher, right? So it was that kind of community. At one point, we lived in just about every area of Mill Valley. I don't know what it was about my mom, but she just moved about. And at one point, we lived on Miller Avenue. We were at 200 Miller. And what was then 205 was a really cute little boy who I would later marry. And at 189 Miller was a friend who is still a friend, Fred Schwartz. And he lived in a Kleiss home that a Kleiss built that was a maternity hospital at one time.
Here in Mill Valley?
The family that lives there now is Schwartz, and they've allowed us to take pictures of the exterior of their home for an exhibit that's upcoming at the library. At any rate, then we had, so this three of us lived in this little triangle. This is like seventh grade, and my friend Linda Graver Lathan lived down the street, and she was at 254. So, you know, you were really close to your friends. And those Jim and Fred and Linda and I still share. They come over every Christmas Eve. So, you know, our bonds are pretty strong, even though I don't necessarily see Linda very often. So, you know, it's really when people find out, because I am very involved in the community, if someone finds out that I actually grew up here, they're absolutely astonished that there are other people who we all have known for many, many years. So it's something that's really precious to me.
So may I ask you a couple of questions? One, you mentioned that you knew when you were in fifth grade and you moved here up to Marion that mm-hmm. it was different. This was very mm-hmm. different. Will you expand a little bit about that? What do you mean? I mean, as a fifth grader noticing something, what was it you noticed that was different? You'd been living in the city.
Where there were no trees.
What part of the city were you living in?
So we had lived in the Mission and we had lived in North Beach. Mm-hmm. And both welcoming communities, but asphalt, you know, mostly asphalt. So coming to, and of course there were so many, so far fewer homes at the time, there was a lot more open space when I was growing up. I used to walk down a dirt road to school from the lower part of Marion to Cascade, and now there's a house right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as a child, walking along there and surrounded by what to me were huge trees. I mean, they certainly aren't first growth redwoods by any means, but to me they were astonishingly tall. Not having seen too many trees except at Golden Gate Park, you know, and those were not the same kinds of trees that we have here. So just, and there was something pretty sacred about it too. You know, there was like going to Old Mill Park. I could go to Old Mill Park after school and there wouldn't be anybody there. There would be no one there. There was an interesting statistic from 2012, because I served on the Parks and Rec Commission. There were 250,000 registered users of Old Mill Park in 2012. Those are registered users. Those are not the people who just come to bring their children to the park and swing, or who have a casual picnic. Those are people who might be, they might be running through the park. It could be part of the Dipsy race. It could be any number of things. But those numbers are just so astonishing for the time that I grew up. Now, if you go back to 1900, that's very different. You see pictures of town where there are hordes of hikers coming up the Dipsy Steps. One of the, Victoria Schwartz, who it was the mother of my friend Fred, who lived at 189 Miller, what lived at 100 level. Her grandmother had bought that property in the 1890 land auction. And Victoria told me that they could sit on their porch and look up at the Dipsy Steps, actually see them, because there was so little growth at that time. They could see right to the steps. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's, I think people like Victoria gave me an interest in Mill Valley and what it was, its history, et cetera. She's the first person who told me about the sulfur springs at Old Mill School. I knew nothing about that. Even having grown up here, I was an adult before I learned about that. Mm-hmm. And so listening to people who had been here for a long time really stirred up my interest in the town and its history, et cetera. So I was really lucky that way. But, you know, most of the people I knew, a great many of them, moved over here from the city, particularly post-World War II. It was colder in the city. They wanted to have be someplace where there was more sun, but not have this horrendous wet, you know, commute into the city. So a lot of my friends' fathers commuted into the city, as did my mother. So that's how a lot of people arrived. But I still was lucky enough to know some of the old timers who gave me all kinds of information. And that leads me to think about, you know, one of the institutions that in Mill Valley that's always been precious to me is the library. And we used the old library on Lovell Avenue. And even on a really hot day, I mean, there aren't many hot days in Mill Valley, but if it was a hot day, you could go downstairs at the old library and there was a teenage room and a children's room. And again, because of the times, I could be the only one in one of those rooms, and it was always very cool and it was very comfortable. And so, you know, you got to know the librarian, and it was a really comfortable place to be and to go. And my mother was an avid reader. I became an avid reader. So we spent a lot of time in the library. So as I got, I think because of my comfort and my love of the community, I became very involved. I became a volunteer very early on. And my husband and I were talking about it recently because we're in the same grade, although he went to Park School and I went to Old Mill. But we each were traffic patrol people. And you had a badge and you had this, it's a hard thing to describe it, this belt thing that looped over you. And you wore your badge and you had your stop sign that you stood out. And the idea of a 10 or 11 year old standing out holding a sign today is pretty scary with the traffic that we have.
So right? You were a crossing
so
guard.
So we were crossing guards. So that was my first volunteer position, I think. So that was really fun. And I was with the Schwartzes, who again lived at 189 Miller, they were really active. They founded, along with some other parents, the Mill Valley Teen Association. And so the point of that was to raise money so that we would have a permanent place for dances.
And so what year is this exactly?
This would have been like 57, 58. And we had dances at the Outdoor Art Club. We had dances at the golf clubhouse. I look at those places now and I wonder how many of us really were there. Those places are, certainly the Outdoor Art Club is larger than the floor area at the golf clubhouse. But, and then when we got older, we had dances at Brown's Hall, which is now the Buddhist temple. Mm-hmm. And those had a pretty pretty bad reputation. Brown's Hall, yeah. I'm not sure why. I don't know if it was dirty dancing or what. But at any rate, the whole point of the Mill Valley Teen Association was to raise money. We wanted a community center. So I don't know if you've heard this story, but the community center, which preceded the one we have now, this beautiful $12 million, I think it was $12 million to build this one, was actually an old restaurant that got barged over from Highway 101. And the city bought it for a dollar and installed it.
The community center was the barge restaurant?
It was old one? No, it was a restaurant that had been barged over. And so at any rate, I love telling this story because it's so amusing. By the time we actually had it available for dances, they were asking me to be a chaperone. That's how long it took to do that. But at any rate, so Mill Valley Teen Association, my parents were involved in that, and the Schwartzes and other parents as well. But that, you know, that whole idea of doing something in your community that also benefits you and your friends and so forth. So
So you basically, Mill Valley was a place where it created its own experience, and it was self-contained in that way.
It was very self-contained.
And
yeah.
So what was the population back then when you're
you
talking?
You know, it's probably 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. But the difference was there wasn't the growth that you see now in places like Tam Valley and Strawberry. Certainly those areas were populated. But today, you know, people will talk about Mill Valley, well, it's only 14,000 people. You tell me that when you try to get in East Blythedale driving. I mean, all 14,000 are not out there, but it just feels that way. But the interesting thing is that if you add up the people who live in Strawberry, the people who live in Homestead, the people who live in Tam Valley, you're talking about 30,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, I mean, if you go outside the city limits, that's the size of our community. That's the population that the community center serves. And when we have a city council meeting and somebody's complaining about the traffic, we've got people from Tam Valley or Homestead coming in to talk about it. It's not just people who live within the city limits.
Okay, so when you were here and when you came in 56,
mm-hmm.
we know that Mill Valley itself was about 10,000
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
But what was the population difference with Strawberry and Homestead?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know. Now, all those kids, of course, I grew up with because they went to Mill Valley schools.
Mm-hmm.
But the density that we have today,
it feels
it's just phenomenal compared to what we've got now. And plus, cars. You know, one of the things I've thought about recently is that we've had this resurgence of children. I love, within my block, one block, we have 19 kids. And these kids range, I think the oldest might be 12. And the idea that these 19 kids are all going to be driving, and, you know, in a really short period of time is really astonishing.
So let's go back, and you talk about your father working at Mill Valley Lumber,
mm-hmm.
And he saw the buses come and go.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get a picture of the, you know, how it would have been different that people had less cars then. I mean, there was transportation. The tracks were still out. You could still see?
No. The tracks had been taken up. The Greyhound bus ran. It wasn't Golden Gate Transit yet.
So was it running people locally around?
No. Just in, you know, there were the commute buses and beyond. But no, there was no local. There was really not much of a need for a local transportation. So there were still freight trains, but not up Miller Avenue. They would go on the what's now the multi-use path to Corte Madera, but there wasn't anything at that time serving Mill Valley. So at any rate, it was just very different. And in trying to paint a picture, first of all, there was usually, as I said, my mother was very unusual in that when we moved here, her being single was pretty unusual. In my fifth grade class, there were two kids who had single mothers. That was it. The rest of them, everybody was married. Their moms were at home. Their fathers worked. There was one car in the family. That was it. And you didn't get, because it was pretty unusual that a kid would have their own car. Certainly boys did more often by the time they got, you know, 16, 17. But it was not a common occurrence that kids in a family would have. My in-laws, and they always had one car. And he commuted. He worked for the PG&E for 40 years, and he took the bus in, and they only had that one car. So that certainly hasn't been the case for me. We've always had two cars.
But you're describing a community, it seems, correct me if I'm wrong, where it really was self-contained, that there was a strong family unit here in town with the commuting parent, whoever worked, including your mother, took the bus into town, I
mm-hmm.
guess. And downtown was I mean, when you went downtown, why did you go downtown? What did you see?
Well, I would go to the movies, the kiddies matinee on Saturday for sure, because that was, you know, you went to the kiddies matinee and spent a quarter, and you could get candy for a nickel. And so, and I was always the first person in line, you know, so that probably should have told me something about how I was developing my character, you know, just I didn't want to be late. And I'm still not, but it was really, it was fun to do. And I don't mean to paint a picture of, you know, something idyllic. There's certainly, like one of my friends actually had, one of the kids in my class actually had a father who was in prison. And he was in San Quentin. He was a local builder, a really prominent local builder. His name was Jerry Cott. He's now deceased. And I recorded his oral history before he died. And he wasn't a very honest person. And he wound up, that's his story. But at any rate, there, it's not like we were an idyllic community in any way. One of the things that I told Joyce Kleiner, who wrote the most recent book, Legendary Locals of Mill Valley, Joyce is a neighbor of mine, and when we were talking about earlier Mill Valley, at least early in my time frame, I told her a story, which she used in her book, that our head librarian at the time, Thelma Percy, had told me. Thelma's mother was, she was Russian and Jewish, and I'm not sure if she had immigrated. I'm not real clear on that. But when she would come to visit Thelma, she would say she didn't like Mill Valley because she couldn't tell where the good neighborhoods were. And when Thelma told me that, I thought, wow, that's why I like it here, because you can't tell where the good neighborhoods are. Although now they're all good neighborhoods, unfortunately. But you had, you know, it was a time when a longshoreman lived right next door to a dentist. Mm-hmm. And I liked that eclecticism of Mill Valley. And that's what, one of the things that made it special, that you could have a friend whose father was in prison, and then you had a friend whose father was the, you know, one of the best pediatric dentists in the county. I mean, so there was that kind of mix that you rarely get. There are, you know, if you look at, there's such an artistic nucleus to the development of our community. And, you know, we're losing that because of affordability. You know, people can't buy here.
So tell me, how about safety? How was it for you to get around as a child? Were you an independent child? Did you?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So was there much crime in the area at the time?
No. And we didn't have, when we lived on Miller Avenue, we lived across the street from Chief McGowan. And he was just the loveliest man. And you knew all the policemen.
So the policemen lived here in town?
All of the policemen lived
here.
Did
all the firemen live here in town?
Yeah, the firemen lived here. Your teachers lived here. Everybody was your neighbor. And that doesn't happen anymore either. When my husband was a firefighter for Alto Richardson Bay, which became part of Southern Marin, and when he retired, which was like 1989, he went out on an early disability retirement. He and the chief were the only two firefighters who lived here in town. And the rest of them, and of course, you know, today, like San Francisco, they all live outside of the city. Today in Mill Valley, they all live. I don't think we have any firefighters who live in Mill Valley. So,
can you remember anything about that happened in Mill Valley distinctly that I don't know, that left an impression with you, something that happened with the community or some kind of event?
Well, sure. You know, if you think of the art festival, it started with paintings in the windows of downtown merchants. That was the very first one in 1956.
Was it just agreed upon by the merchants that they were going to have a week of paintings? Or
well,
what happened?
Wasn't the merchants, I don't know. I mean, I was 10 years old and I haven't researched it and I don't know how it came about. But I do remember that there were paintings in the windows of various stores. And it evolved from there. I mean, there was at one point, it expanded and they had it in the parking lot by the depot, which is now the drive-through part and the plaza. And they closed all that off and had art. And then for a while it was a Boyle Park. And then it came to Old Mill. I don't remember what year.
So when it started, what year did it start?
56.
56.
Yeah. And so, you know, that was, that was really evident of part of our artistic culture and community. And you knew, just as I said, you knew people who might be a dentist or a longshoreman. You also knew artists. There was such a healthy, wonderful mix of people and occupations. There certainly wasn't much diversity. I mean, I remember the controversy of the Collinses being the first African American family in town. A friend of ours who we grew up with, who I went to school with at Old Mill, Dennis Young, has told me about his Chinese American family and how difficult it was to buy a house on Tamalpais Avenue. And that would have been in, you know, just mid-50s. So there wasn't a lot of diversity, but it was, you know, starting, you know, people were starting to break that bubble.
Would you consider it, there were a blend of artists and blue collar and professional,
it
a liberal or non-liberal? I mean, we're close to San Francisco here, which is an urban.
Well, that's
cultural.
Interesting. We were a Republican community. We were, for the most part, I think voters, if you go back historically, you'll see that at that time, Marin County was Republican and Mill Valley wasn't any different. However, what else was here were people like the secretary of the Longshoremen's Union lived here. There were the artists I mentioned. There were a lot of liberals. In fact, our friend Dennis Young said that the reason that his Chinese American family were able to buy here is because a real estate agent went to the various people around them and said, would you mind if a Chinese American family moves here? And they said no. And he said they felt fortunate that the people who were approached were all very liberal in their thinking, which was not the case in other areas. So
if, let me ask, if you're living in a very self-contained area, and mm-hmm. When you ventured out to Sausalito or San Rafael, did you have that same feeling of home that you had here in Mill Valley? Would Mill Valley represent basically Marin County at large in many ways?
I think each town was really different. And of course, it was not, I can remember getting on the bus, the Greyhound bus at 12, and going into the city. I can remember my friend Linda Graver and I going in to see Sandra Dee, the movie star, at Macy's. And we were 12 years old. The idea today of putting two 12-year-old girls on a bus to go into the city is not something that I would do, but it was different. you didn't think twice of it. Now it's just kind of scary. But gosh, going down to, yeah, it just doesn't even occur to me that I would let my grandkids go there, but we did. So, but you know, we really didn't go until we were in high school. We really didn't venture far. Of course, you know, my mother would take us to the ballet, or most often she just sent us to the ballet. I mean, she didn't go with us. Here, get on the bus and go see the Nutcracker, or get on the bus and go to Macy's. You couldn't shop here, to speak of. We did have a department store at the corner of Miller and Throckmorton. We had a department store called Mayer's, but it was very expensive. And so we had to go into the city. At that time, you know, there was no Northgate. There weren't malls. You went into the city to do your shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did. We get on the bus and go shop.
So maybe you can tell me, if you can remember back, how Mill Valley changed with time. Now we're in the 50s into the early 60s. And then towards the late 60s, things are really changing in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How did it affect Mill Valley?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When even in the 60s, literally there was no traffic downtown. I mean, there was none. And I walked a lot. And we had a number of bars downtown. And that's the only place cars would be parked. They'd be clustered around the three bars that were downtown.
Which were called?
There was Quinn's, which is near where Mill Valley Flowers is now. Mm-hmm. There was the Old Mill, where Vasco's is. And then there was the Office, which is where the old Sweetwater used to be on Throckmorton.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might see a couple of cars parked around there after dinner time. Other than that, there wasn't anything in sight. Not a car in sight.
Wow.
So it was really boring to us that there was nothing to do. But I knew enough to have the sense that one day I would rue that, oh, there's nothing to do here, and look at, there's nobody around. But certainly, you know, the changes that started happening were really more obvious in the late 60s, 70s, you know, that when, I'd say more even the early 70s, when there were more, certainly more people. We had, one issue we had were dogs. Dogs were just running everywhere, and there was no such thing as a poop bag. I mean, nobody would have ever considered picking up pet stuff.
So these were all locally owned pets
just
run amok?
And they would come out in packs, and it was a huge issue because we had dogs everywhere. It was
that's great.
I don't know.
I've never heard that.
It's nice to be done with that, you know.
So how was it contained?
I think, well, you know, it was probably leash laws, et cetera, and there was just a certain intolerance, and we moved past it. But it was quite a problem. You know, another thing about particularly the downtown area is that you did know the merchants. When I went to buy my Campfire Girl uniform, where I was going, I knew that when I bought my kids' shoes, I would go to Mosher's Shoes, and that their daughter was in my brownie troop. And so, you know, you had these kinds of connections that we still do to a degree. You know, there's some connections, not as many, but I really cherish them. I really appreciate knowing the people I'm doing business with. And there's not a lot of them, but there's a few. So that I think I do miss.
Did you leave for school when you went to college?
No, no. In fact, I got married when I was 18.
Right out of high school?
Right out of high school.
To a guy in your high school class?
Pardon me?
To a man in your high school class?
He was ahead of me. And he will talk about social change. He went to Vietnam. And so before he left, we got married.
His name?
Ray Giacomino. Mm-hmm. Had he not been going to Vietnam, I probably wouldn't have married him, which means I wouldn't have had my two daughters. So that was absolutely worthwhile. So we were married for 9 years and divorced. And at any rate, so that was that.
But you didn't go away to school then?
No, I went to school. I would take like one class a semester because I had kids.
Right away you had children at 18?
I had children. No, I had my first daughter when I was 22 and my second at 23.
That's pretty young.
And so I was working. I was, I would take one class a semester.
Where?
I went to College of Marin and got, you know, my first 30 units, I think, there. And then I went to USF and graduated from USF. So that was, you know, that's the way it happened. And that was pretty common. I had a number of friends who got married very young, went back to school, and, you know, I have a friend who's an anthropologist who actually, she worked at the Chamber of Commerce in downtown Mill Valley after school. We had work experience in high school, and she worked there. And so she became an anthropologist. I have another friend who became she's really interesting. Her father was a really interesting Sausalito artist.
And maybe you could give names.
Sure. Okay, so that was Gabrielle Trubach, and her father was Serge Trubach. And he was a pretty well-known artist in Sausalito. And so she was one of my good friends, and we all, there were, as I say, a number of us who got married young and then
and you
went
stayed,
back to school.
Back then, of course, it was very common for women
very common.
Not to go to college.
Yes, very common.
Encouraged by some parents, as I recall. So to have small children and be taking class, I'm sure would... Some people may have considered it not necessary, but
well,
yeah, you did.
Yeah. But I was taking one class a semester, period. I mean, that's what I could manage to do. So it took me a long time.
But you stayed in Mill Valley when you married your high school.
You know, student. we bought a house in Fairfax. We lived there for 3 years. And the reason we bought in Fairfax is, this was 1969.
Mm-hmm.
The house was $18,500. We had looked at a house on Walnut here in Mill Valley, and it was $22,000, and we couldn't afford it. But we could buy the house there for $18,500.
And your mother's still living in Mill Valley.
Yes. And, of course, I spent most of my time here anyway, at least during the day, because she had a pool. I brought my kids down.
And she's living where? Did she ever buy a home, or is she just renting from place to place?
No. She had purchased a home at that point. So, at
on Miller,
rate,
is that where you...
No, she actually bought a home in Tam Valley.
Okay.
So, at any rate, I spent a lot of time here in those 3 years. Then we sold that house and moved back. And I divorced. I went to work and worked my way up the corporate ladder. And actually... Corporate America paid for a large part of my education because at the time, taking classes at USF was pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what enabled me to go there, is just, you know, having a lot of help from Corporate America. So I worked I worked in banking and insurance, and I retired in 2012. And I was, before we started the recording, I mentioned to you it's hard to remember what I was doing in my work. I was primarily in operations and customer service management, and I loved what I did. But it seems so distant now. And I still remained intact and involved in my community. I always felt there was one thing I could commit to while I was working and being a parent. And so, you know, for a while I was a Brownie leader, and we had a Brownie troop that met on Saturdays, which was the first troop that ever had done that. But that was when I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really fun. I served on the library board. I was chair of the task force that developed the Library Foundation,
mm-hmm.
and I served on the foundation board after that. And at the time that I was on the library board, that's when we had gotten, we were putting together a history room. And because we got a grant, when I was on the board, we were actually able to hire a history librarian who started cataloging all the work that, all the donations that we had gotten from Lucretia Little, all her records.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the beginning of the history room while I was on the library board, and that was from 1976 to 1982. And so that's what really, that kind of sparked renewed interest. I'd been so focused on raising kids and working. But I figured I could be involved with the library, and I saw that what was happening with the history room, and that was pretty exciting. So, what else have I done?
Let's talk about what you've been doing in the since 2012 when you retired.
Okay.
About all, you know, I know you through Clean Mill Valley,
mm-hmm.
and the various boards and that you're on, and the various groups that you've created. Let's talk about what it is. What you know, how you see Mill Valley now, and
mm-hmm.
how you see it going into the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I have been. I just came off the Parks and Recreation Commission, and I was there for 6 years. And one of the things that I really wanted to do while I was on the commission, and I wasn't successful at it, was to create a park where we had selected Sycamore Park as a possible site for this, but to create a place where it was pack it in, pack it out as an environment, because it has concerned me that litter has such a huge impact on our environment. Not only does it, I mean, it's not attractive, obviously, but it also goes into our streams in the bay, and it goes out into the ocean, and so I wasn't able to get that done there, but because I was retired and I had the time, in 2012, I contacted people from multiple groups, including Mill Valley Stream Keepers, the Outdoor Art Club, Rotary, the Chamber of Commerce. I'm sure I'm missing some, but key organizations in town, and we met and talked about what are we going to do to address litter. Now, the Outdoor Art Club, of which I'm a member, has a long history of cleaning up the community and beautifying it. And so I was sure to include the Outdoor Art Club in that. And they have been incredibly supportive. So we formed an organization called Clean Mill Valley. And we have been so incredibly fortunate in the people who work with us. Bloomathon, which is a Mill Valley institution that has been planting bulbs and beautifying and cleaning up on Earth Day. Jill Young from Bloomathon has been a really, you know, just a stalwart contributor and part of this. And so we meet monthly. We have developed relationships with all of the organizations I've mentioned. We have periodic cleanups. We got a grant from the Outdoor Art Club for almost $1,800 for our materials, which include decals and a merchant pledge. We have merchants who are pledging to sweep in front of their stores and to recycle, et cetera, and to educate their employees about it, about recycling and so forth. And that's been really interesting. We have to date 91 merchants signed up for this program. And what makes it so unique is that we have been working with Greenwood School, which is at the site of the old Our Lady of Mount Carmel School. And the environmental studies teacher there, Julie Hanft, has been this just incredible ball of energy and leading her kids, her students, mostly sixth graders, to do environmental work. And they go into merchant locations and sign them up on a pledge, give them a sticker to put on their window, and then they follow up to make sure that the merchant is adhering to the pledge that they signed.
And how do they follow up? And how old are these children?
They're 11 years old. And, you know, they are far more effective than I would be, I'm sure. But they will go into, they haven't started this phase yet, but they will walk into a store and say, "How are you doing? I see there's some litter outside of your store." You know, it's just been,
whose idea was this to get the, I mean, who could say no to a child, right?
Exactly. You know, well, what's been so interesting about this project is that the students, some of their parents, and certainly Julie, their teacher, come to our monthly meetings of Clean Mill Valley, which we hold at the Outdoor Art Club. And we make sure that those students are very much a part of the process. They are not discounted because they are 11 years old. They are the ones we sat down and wrote this pledge together, something that could resonate with them. We made sure that we had other shareholders. We wanted to make sure that, for instance, we worked with Jim Welty, who is one of the key people in the Chamber of Commerce, because he could tell us, what will merchants agree to and what won't they? Are we asking them to do too much? Is this acceptable? He worked with us. So the students had an idea of really coordinating with adults, and I don't believe they ever felt that they were kids. They weren't kids. They were just part of this solution. And they come to these meetings and it would just, oh my gosh, they're so enthusiastic and they're just terrific, just terrific.
I've actually been to the meeting before, and it's, I have to say that they lead the meetings quite a bit. These are very proactive children.
Yes. And we want that to happen. We don't want to take it over. We want them to feel empowered, because that's what's making its work.
Well, what you're describing is that community involvement, that where people are very much involved with the merchants, as you're describing when you were younger, mm-hmm. that sense of people knowing each other and having a familiar exchange,
mm-hmm.
with as a community member, which is very much what this program that you're describing is. It's not just, you know, initiating, but it describes more than just a project.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and so our next step is to, Julie has already made a connection with TAM High, and we are going to be meeting this month with some students at TAM. And I have gotten a sizable donation from a fairy godmother in the community, because I said, what I really want to do next is get out and educate students in the schools. I mean, we had that in the 70s, and you can't, you know, you just, you have to keep on with these things.
Yes.
It's just, the founders of the Outdoor Art Club were paying kids to pick up litter in the first part of the 1900s, you know. You can't stop it. I mean, litter is not going to stop, but if you continue the education, if you continue this sense of community and this belongs to you, then people are going to stay involved. So it's just something you have to keep on doing. And along those lines, the other thing you asked, well, what have you done since you retired? Part of that, you know, having a sense of the community and how it's changing. You asked about that earlier too. My mother-in-law, Pat Stevenson, belonged to the community church for many, many years. And she told me, you know, they would have an opportunity sale. It was a big church rummage sale. And it was a big, big deal. They made, you know, like the biggest part of their budget came from this rummage sale, right? And so as she got older and older, and her generation was literally dying off, they couldn't find volunteers to do this. And I became aware, and especially because of other organizations I was involved with, like the Historical Society, finding board members, finding volunteers for anything was difficult because, one, we were speeding up the demands we have on people's time. Kids, people with children who at one point may have been able to do homework entirely on their own could no longer do that. Their parents that were typically much more involved. When I went to school, my parents weren't involved in the school. They let the school do that job. That's not where we've evolved. So parents are having to spend more time and enjoying it too, I'm sure. But it meant that we had fewer volunteers. And so a couple of years ago, I went to the Historical Society and I talked to Bloomathon because those were two organizations I knew who were looking for volunteers and were having challenges with it. And I said, if we were to put together some kind of an event where we could solicit volunteerism, where we could have this smorgasbord of different organizations in town where people could learn about volunteer opportunities and sign up, would you be interested? Historical Society said yes. Bloomathon said yes. And to make a point, Bloomathon is no longer. Bloomathon is, they aged out. These women were in their 80s, some in their 90s, some maybe a little younger, but not much. And so the city hasn't been willing, fortunately, to let go of Bloomathon, and they're looking for ways to, they have a new name for it. It's called Pollination.
Bloomathon, for those that don't know about Bloomathon, it's a city beautifying program where you plant flowers and various
right.
things like this.
Right. Yes. And they were very much in conjunction with the city. The
mm-hmm.
city acted as their financial arm. I mean, we would get donations, but the city would retain the money and they would be purchasing the bulbs and, or, you know, make sure that we had the money to purchase the bulbs.
So now it's Pollination?
So now it's called Pollination, but there's some challenges about finding people to take over where the older people can no longer do it. So 2 years ago, we had our first volunteer day event at the plaza. So it was 2014. We had about 30 nonprofits in the plaza during National Volunteer Week. The City Council issued a proclamation acknowledging National Volunteer Week. They provide the tables and the chairs, and I've done the organizing. This is the second year that we're doing it. We have a city council member or two come down who talks about running for city council. We have the city clerk there talking about commissions. We have the fire department there talking about the volunteer fire department and the Emergency Planning Commission and all of the library associations, all our environmental groups. We have there's just so much that arts and entertainment, some of the, like there's villages of Marin and Homestead. These are all, by the way, these are all Mill Valley organizations. They are not, we did not invite people in who are serving all of Marin County. They have to serve Mill Valley people. For the first year, we weren't able to get an interest from Tam High last year. This year, Tam High will be there. They have an outreach committee, which is equivalent to what you and I probably knew as the student council.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be there. And
what's the date that this takes place?
This is April 18th, and it will be 10 to 2 in the plaza. The Historical Society will be there. There will be the Chamber of Commerce, a lot of different groups. And it's one of the things when the mayor issued the proclamation at the most recent city council meeting, which was Monday night the 6th, and I accepted the proclamation, and one of the things I said in accepting it is that what was so joyous last year was that we had such a good time, all these various groups. We had a great time together. We got to know one another. It was like a big community picnic. And of course, if you're involved, you know a lot of the same people.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, there were plenty more to meet, and it was just a wonderful event. So we're doing it again this year. And so those are a couple of things I've done with my retirement. And I lead a hiking group for the Outdoor Art Club, moderate hiking. Some of the women in our group we've had two women in their 80s who hike with us. So...
Did you hike a lot as a child growing up here?
I hiked a fair amount as a child. Once I hit high school, no, I didn't. But as an adult, yes. So.
Well, what I'm enjoying listening to you describe what it is, you know, some of the things that you've done is, and your involvement in the town is really a, I think, especially with the volunteer program that's coming up, where the Volunteers Day is, for those that are moving here, or those that are recent to moving here in the last few years or whatever, it is a real opportunity to plug in quite quickly to our town.
Mm-hmm.
As a way to swiftly come to know each other, to be mentored by those who have mm-hmm. been doing what they've been doing for a long time, to learn about the history, about the people, the legacy of the mm-hmm. people that lived here before.
And to be included. To be included.
Do you think that that's what you felt when you first came here to Mill Valley, from a large urban area to suddenly you'd come to a place where you were really home and included?
Yes, although I think I've always felt that way. I mean, because you form communities wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, living in North Beach in that little Italian, it was very Italian-American enclave, and I felt very cared for. I attended St. Peter St. Paul Church and went to catechism there and went to Mass there, and you know, there is continuity. You know, when we moved to Mill Valley, I went to Our Lady of Mount Carmel and so forth. You know, I would find community wherever I am.
Make community as well, I suspect.
Yeah.
Create and... All right, so... What haven't we talked about so far that you would like to share to the people that will be listening to this interview?
You know, I think there are changes that have occurred that are so unimaginable. Like some of the things that... like we were talking about earlier about being on a bus and going into the city when you're 12 years old. I mean, you know, that wouldn't happen today. Well, one of the things I think about with amusement is the old mill. Well, when I was in high school, we carved our initials in the old mill. Now, it would never have occurred to me that it was a historic monument. I mean, it wasn't at the time. It was falling down. It wasn't really cared for. And there wasn't any local appreciation for it other than, I mean, it was there and we knew the town was named for it, but that was about it. So there are things like that that occur, you know, that you think that the kinds of things that you did as a kid, you wouldn't do in another time. It's not that we didn't know better. It's that that's what everybody did, or everybody let their dogs out and never cleaned up after them. I mean, you know, that's just because there was this more, it was more of a rural, rural stretching it a bit, but it was just not, it's certainly not as neat and tidy as it is in some ways. I mean, not that we don't have issues with litter, but we don't have the kinds of issues that we wouldn't have needed a dog park, for instance. Mm-hmm. It would never have, I mean, people would have laughed at the idea of a dog park. Or, you know, thinking that you would have a park where the garbage dump was, you would, I mean, to, when I think of Mill Valley history and how we've moved out,
mm-hmm.
you know, at one time, the city limit, what they called Jagtown, which was around Hill Street, et cetera, and yeah, around Hill and Grove, that was the bad area. The 2 a.m. club, which is at Montford, was the 2 a.m. club because the bars in town had to close at midnight, and the 2 a.m. club could stay open till 2 a.m. And so, and it's just what we consider certainly within the city limits of town. And then when I was growing up, there was certainly nothing like the Redwoods across from the high school. There was nothing out there at all on that side of Camino Alto. There was the train that came through, the tracks that came through.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Why don't you explain for people that don't know what Jagtown was, actually why it was called Jagtown?
Well, and you may know more about that than I do, but it was, I know there was a bar there. There were bars, and there was also rumored to be a house of prostitution. I'm not sure that that's accurate, but it was the wild part of town along East Blythedale, near Hill, Grove, Dell, and around that area.
It's the town's early conception, drinking within the town limits was not allowed.
Right.
Whether
right.
that was legal or not to state, it that was the reality. So outside the town limits,
yeah,
was where the bars were.
Yeah.
Jagtown, yeah. As in going on a jag. It's an idiom from that mm-hmm. era meant to go wild, to have fun. And so that's where, now I hadn't heard about the House of Prostitution, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, well, that's supposed to be the house that is, it's now, I believe, apartments, and it may very well have been at the time, but right at the corner of East Blythedale and Dell Lane.
Oh, interesting.
So, but, you know, some of the things that you'll read will, I really think the truth can be stretched. And a good example would be, I knew the grandson of John Finn, the original Finn who owned Wildwood on Miller Avenue. Mm-hmm. Now, Wildwood was a home that was, oh my God, I can't imagine what it was like at the time they bought it, but it was 7 acres on Miller Avenue near Millwood, and the Finns had a lot of kids. They had the 200 Miller, which my mother rented for a while, was built for one of their sons as a wedding gift. Their grandson, who was raised for part of his life there, was someone I got to know in my adulthood, and he's since he's been dead some years, and he would have been, if he were alive today, he would certainly be in his probably late 80s. But he would tell me stories, like the house at 200 Miller, his grandparents built for his Uncle Bob as a wedding gift. And he said they purchased or built, bought a house for each one of their kids, and they had a whole pile of them. And there's a story that their house, which at the time was one of the largest in southern Marin, was a Maybeck, Bernard Maybeck, architecturally designed property. And when I was very active with the Historical Society, I communicated in writing with the director of the Maybeck Society, who said, that is most certainly not a Maybeck house. And this real estate agent was advertising it as a Maybeck designed house. And so we were trying to figure out, well, where did this information come from? So it came from the oral history of one of the daughters. The granddaughter, the grandson said to me, oh, you know, that's Aunt so-and-so. And she always likes to feel important. And she knows darn well that Maybeck didn't design that house. And so it's stuff like that. You know, you get this incorrect information that's perpetuated. And we did get the real estate agent to back off the claim that it was Maybeck design, because the person who's head of the Maybeck Society said, there's nothing consistent about the style. There's nothing in it that he's ever done. There's nothing in his files, et cetera, et cetera. But this, you know, this oral history that got collected some time ago, where the woman claimed it was Maybeck design, was going to be perpetuated, and certainly by the real estate person who wanted to sell the house at a greater price. So,
well, that's how it is with history sometimes.
That, yeah, it is.
If you were to, as we're closing up here, if you were to think about how you'd like to see Mill Valley going into the future, we've had, you know, you really caught a wave of a small, idyllic small town in many ways.
Yeah.
Next to a very interesting urban area.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been many changes over the years. What would you like to see going forward for your community? Are you're going to stay here, right?
I have no intention of leaving, but I'll tell you, and what I want is not possible. It won't happen. I raised my children here. Both sets of grandparents were here. If I couldn't get to an event, my father and my mother were there to watch the kids. If I was on a business trip or something like that, they were to play. I couldn't do that with my grandchildren because they live in Sonoma County, and trying to get through the traffic after working in the city to go to a play on a weeknight or a game just wasn't going to happen. And so I missed that. I missed that sense of closeness, and that certainly impacted my relationship with my children, my grandchildren. But my kids certainly couldn't afford to buy here. And we were very fortunate to be able to purchase when we did. And so we've been lucky that way. So it saddens me that there is no room anymore for people like who my mother was when she came here. There's no way that a single woman with a high school education could move to Mill Valley and buy a home, which she eventually did. So that saddens me. And so I don't think anything that I would want that's really valuable is doable. It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It won't stop me, the reality of the economics of today will not stop me from doing what I do, building community and taking part in it.
Yes, well, we may not be able to have that kind of community with our merchants and the various stores and the support with the police chief and our firemen that live in our community, but we certainly can reach out to the others that live here and find another way to have community. Mm-hmm.
So having said that, I think that concludes our interview.
Okay.
Thank you so much for
your time
and for all the interesting stories. And we'll see you on Volunteer Day.
Okay.